problems. When she moved to do so, however, in the candlelight, she caught sight of something glittering amid the wreckage of her desk. As if in a trance, Navani rose and walked over. The guard wasn't looking. Navani brushed aside ash to find a metal dagger with a diamond affixed to the pommel. She stared at it, confused. It had exploded, hadn't it? No, this is the second one. The one Raboniel used to kill her daughter. She tossed it aside as if hating it, once the deed was done. A precious, priceless weapon. And the fused had discarded it. How long had Raboniel been awake? Did she feel like Navani, exhausted, pushed to the limit, forgetting important details? For there, glimmering violet-black in the gemstone, was a soft glow, not completely used up in the previous killing, a small charge of anti-void light.
Caladan took the steps down, one at a time, unhurried as he walked toward the trap. A certain momentum pushed him forward, as if his next actions were soul cast into stone, already unchangeable. A mountain seemed to fill in behind him, blocking his retreat. Forward. Only forward. One step after another. He emerged from the stairwell onto the ground floor. Two dire form regals had been guarding the path, but they backed off, hands on swords, humming frantically. Caladan ignored them, turning toward the atrium. He set his spear to his shoulder and strode through this central corridor. No more hiding. He was too tired to hide, too wrung out for tactics and strategy. The pursuer wanted him? Well, he would have Caladan, presented as he had always been seen. Dressed in his uniform, striding to the fight, his head high. Humans and singers alike scattered before him. Caladan saw many of the humans wearing the markings Relaine had described, shash glyphs drawn on their foreheads. Storm them, they believed in him. They wore the symbol of his shame, his failure, and his imprisonment. And they made it something better. He couldn't help feeling that this was it. The last time he'd wear the uniform, his final act as a member of Bridge 4. One way or another, he had to move on from the life he'd been clinging to and the simple squad of soldiers who had formed the heart of that life. All these people believed in a version of him who had already died, High Marshal Caladan Stormblessed, the valiant soldier, leader of the Windrunners, stalwart and unwavering. Like Cal, the innocent youth, squad leader Caladan, the soldier in Amaram's army, and Caladan the slave, High Marshal Stormblessed had passed. Caladan had become someone new, someone who could not measure up to the legend. But with all these people believing in him, falling in behind him, whispering with hope and anticipation, perhaps he could resurrect Stormblessed for one last battle. He didn't worry about exposing himself. There was nowhere to run. Regals and singer soldiers gathered in bunches, tailing him and whispering harshly, but they would let a fused deal with a radiant. Other fused would know, though. Caladan had been claimed already. He was pursued. As Caladan drew near to the breakaway, the hallway to his right would merge with a large open marketplace, he finally felt her. He stopped fast, looking that direction. The dozens of people following him hushed as he stared intently and raised his right hand in the direction of the market. Syl, he thought, I'm here. Find me. A line of light, barely visible, bounced around in the distance. It turned and spun toward him, picking up speed, its path growing straighter. She grew brighter, and awareness of her blossomed in his mind. They were not whole, either one, without the other. She recovered herself with a gasp, then landed on his hand, wearing her girlish dress. Are you all right? He whispered.
No, she said. No, not at all. That felt like it did when I nearly died. Like it did when I drifted for centuries. I feel sad, Kaladin, and cold.
I understand those feelings, he replied, but the enemy Syl. They're going to execute the Radiants, and they might have my parents. She peered up at him. Then her shape fuzzed, and she was instantly in a uniform like his, colored Kolin blue. Kaladin nodded, then turned and continued, shattered by the hopes and prayers of hundreds, shattered by his own reputation, a man who would never cry in the night, huddled against the wall, terrified, a man he was determined to pretend to be, one last time. He checked Navani's flying gauntlet, which he'd attached to his belt, easy to unhook if needed, at his right side so it pointed behind him. Kaladin and Dabid had reset its conjoined weights the other night. It hadn't worked so well for him in the previous fight, but now he understood its limitations. It was a device designed by engineers, not soldiers. He couldn't wear it on his hand, where it would interfere with his ability to hold a spear. But perhaps it could offer him an edge in another capacity. With Syl flying as a ribbon of light beside his head, he strode into the atrium, with that endless wall of glass rising as a window in front of him. An equally endless hollow shaft in the stone rose up toward the pinnacle of the tower, surrounded by balconies on most levels. Heavenly ones hovered in the air, though he didn't have time to search for Leshwi. Syl moved out in front of him, then paused, hovering, seeming curious. What? He asked.
High storm coming, she said in his head.
Of course there was. It was that kind of day. People in the atrium began to scatter as they saw him, accompanied by anticipation spren. As the place emptied, he picked up a hulking figure standing in the dead center of the chamber, blocking the way to the room on the other side, the infirmary. Kaladin brandished his spear in challenge, but the pursuer cared nothing for honor. He was here for the kill, and he came streaking at Kaladin to claim it. 103. The Legend You Live. Watch them struggle. Witness their writhing, their refusal to surrender. Humans cling to the rocks with the vigor of any Rosharan vine. Musings of El on the first of the final 10 days. There he is, Teft said, ducking and moving with the crowd of people in the atrium. With a cloak over his uniform, he didn't draw attention. He'd found that was often the case. Kaladin turned heads, even if he was dressed in rags. He was that kind of man. But Teft, he looked forgettable. In this cloak, he was simply another worker, walking with his daughter through the atrium. Hopefully Lift would keep her head down so the hood of her own cloak obscured her features, otherwise someone might wonder why his daughter looked an awful lot like a certain bothersome Radiant who was always making trouble in the tower.
What took him so long?
Lift whispered as the two of them sidled over along the wall of the atrium, acting frightened of the sudden rush of people who made way for Kaladin and the pursuer.
Boy likes to grandstand, Teft said.
But storms, it was hard not to feel inspired at the sight of Kaladin, framed in the entryway like that, in a sharp blue uniform, his hair free, his scars bold and stark on his forehead, eyes intense enough to pierce the darkest storm.
You did good with that one, Teft, he thought,
giving himself permission to feel a little pride.
You ruined your own life something fierce, but you did good with that one.
Fenderana whispered comfort in his ear. She'd shrunk at his request and rode on his shoulder. He nodded at the words. If his family hadn't gotten involved with the Envisagers, he wouldn't have known how to help Kaladin when he'd needed it. And then the Blackthorn probably would have died, and they wouldn't have found this tower. So, maybe it was time to let go of what he'd done. Together, they inched along the wall toward the infirmary. Storm him if having his own personal spren wasn't the best thing that had happened to him, other than Bridge 4. She could be a little crusty at times, which made them a good match. She also refused to accept his excuses, which made them an even better match. Kaladin started fighting, and Teft couldn't spare him much more than a wish of goodwill. The lad would be fine. Teft simply had to do his part. They waited to see if the guards in the infirmary came out at the ruckus, and blessedly they did. Unfortunately, one remained at the door, gaping at the battle, but apparently determined to remain at his post. Stormform Regal, too, which was just Teft's luck. Still, he and Lyft were able to work the press of the crowd to their advantage, pretending they were confused civilians. Maybe that Stormform would let them hide in the infirmary. Instead, the Regal at the door showed them an indifferent palm, gesturing for them to flee in another direction. He turned aside a number of other people who saw the infirmary as a convenient escape, so Teft and Lyft didn't draw undue attention. People in the atrium cried out as Kaladin and the pursuer clashed. Heavenly ones floated down to watch the battle, their long trains descending like curtains, adding to the surreal sight. In fact, everybody's eyes were fixed on the contest between Kaladin and the pursuer. So, Teft took the Regal guard by the arm. These Regals had that captive lightning running through them, so touching the singer gave Teft a shock. He cried out and shook his hand, backing away as the Stormform turned toward him in annoyance.
"Please, Bright Lord," Teft said. "What is happening?"
As the Regal focused on him, Lyft slipped around behind and cracked the door open.
"Be on with you," the Regal said. "Don't bother."
Teft rushed the singer, tackling him around the waist and throwing him backward through the open door. The Regal's powers sent another shock through Teft, but in the confusion, Teft was able to get him to the ground and put him in a dead man's hold. Lyft shut the door with a click. She waited, anxious, as Teft struggled to keep pressure on the creature's throat. He pulled in all the stormlight he had, but felt the Stormform's power growing, the creature's skin crackling with red lightning.
"Healing," Teft said.
Lyft leapt over and pressed her hand against his leg as the Stormform released a bolt of power straight through Teft into the floor. The crack it made was incredible. Teft felt a burning pain, like someone had decided to use his stomach as a convenient place to build their fire pit. But he held on, and Lyft healed him. He even managed to roll to the side and use Stormlight to stick the Regal to the ground. That let him keep the pressure on and resist the shocks that followed, less powerful than the first. Finally, the Regal went limp, unconscious. Teft huffed and stood, though he first had to unstick his clothing from the floor. Storming Stormlight. He looked down and found the front of his shirt had been burned clean through. He glanced to Fenderana, who had grown to full size. She folded her arms thoughtfully.
"What?"
he asked.
"Your hair is standing up," she said, then grinned.
She looked like a little kid when she did that, and he couldn't help returning the expression.
"Move," she said to him. "Seal the door."
Right.
He stepped over and infused the doorframe with stormlight. Someone would have heard that lightning bolt.
"Lyft,"
he shouted as he worked.
"Get to it. I want these radiants up and taking orders faster than an arrow falls."
He glanced to Fenderana, standing beside him and meeting his eyes.
"We can do this. Get them up. Grab Kel's family. Get out."
"Through the window?" she asked.
Outside the east-facing window was a sheer drop of hundreds of feet. He felt moderately good about his ability to climb down it. How far would everyone have to get before their radiant powers returned? He feared the Heavenly Ones would find out before then and come after them. Well, he'd see what the others said once they were awake. Teft turned from the new sealed door to inspect the room and Lyft's progress. Where was that surgeon and his... Lyft screamed. She leaped back as one of the bodies on the floor nearby emerged from beneath the sheet. The figure, dressed all in black, swung a shard blade at her. She nearly managed to get away, but the blade caught her in the thighs, cutting with the grace of an eel through the air. Lyft collapsed, her legs ruined by the blade. The figure in the black uniform turned from Lyft and, blazing with stormlight, focused on Teft. Sunken cheeks, prominent nose, glowing eyes. Moash. Kaladin didn't run. He knew what the pursuer would do. Indeed, the creature acted as he had each time before, dropping a husk and streaking toward Kaladin to grapple him. That was one husk spent. The pursuer had two others before he would be trapped in his form and had to either flee or face Kaladin and risk dying. Kaladin stepped directly into the pursuer's path and dropped his spear, willingly entering the grapple. Turning at the last moment, he caught the pursuer's hands as they reached for him. Thrumming with stormlight, Kaladin held the pursuer's wrists. Storms, the creature was stronger than he was, but Kaladin wouldn't run or hide. Not this time. This time he only had to give Teft and Lift enough space to work. And Kaladin had discovered something during their last fight. This creature was not a soldier.
"Give in, little man," the pursuer said. "I am as unavoidable as the coming storm. I will chase you forever."
"Good," Kaladin said.
"Bravado,"
the pursuer said, laughing. He managed to hook Kaladin's foot, then used his superior strength to shove Kaladin to the ground. Best Kaladin could do was hang on and pull him down as well. The pursuer kneed Kaladin in the gut, then twisted to get him in a hold.
"So foolish,"
Kaladin writhed, barely able to keep from being immobilized. Syl flitted around them. As the pursuer tried for a lock, Kaladin twisted around and met the pursuer's eyes, then smiled. The pursuer growled and repositioned to press Kaladin against the ground by his shoulders.
"I'm not afraid of you," Kaladin said, "but you're going to be afraid of me." "Madness," the pursuer said. "Your inevitable fate has caused madness in your frail mind."
Kaladin grunted, back to the cold stone, using both hands to push the pursuer's right hand away. He kept his eyes locked on the pursuer's.
"I killed you," Kaladin said, "and I'll kill you now. Then every time you return for me, I'll kill you again." "I'm immortal,"
the pursuer growled, but his rhythm had changed, not so confident.
"Doesn't matter," Kaladin said. "I've heard what people say about you. Your life isn't the blood in your veins, but the legend you live. Each death kills that legend a little more. Each time I defeat you, it will rip you apart, until you're no longer known as the pursuer. You'll be known as the defeated. The creature who, no matter how hard he tries, can't ever beat me!"
Kaladin reached down and activated Navani's device at his belt, then pressed the grip that dropped the weight. It was as if someone had suddenly tied a rope to his waist and then pulled him out of the pursuer's grip, sliding him across the floor of the atrium. He deactivated the device, then rolled to his feet, looking across the short distance at his enemy. Syl fell in beside him, glaring at the pursuer in a perfect mimic of his posture. Then, together, they smiled as Kaladin pulled out his scalpel. Moash kicked Lift toward the wall, sending her limp and tumbling. She lay still and didn't move after that. Moash floated forward, blade out, attention affixed solely on Teft. Teft cursed himself for a fool. He'd focused on taking care of the Regal at the door. He should have known to check for irregularities. Now that he looked, he could see Cal's parents and brother bound and gagged, visible through a gap in the cloth of the draped-off section at the rear. The real trap wasn't outside with the pursuer. It was in here, with a much deadlier foe. A man who had been trained for war by Kaladin himself. "Hello, Teft," Moash said softly, landing in front of the rows of unconscious people on the floor.
"How are the men?"
"Safe from you,"
Teft said, pushing aside his cloak and unsheathing the long knife he had hidden underneath. Couldn't move through a crowd unseen with a spear, unfortunately.
"Not all of them, Teft," Moash said.
There was a shadow on his face, despite the room's many lit spheres. Moash lunged forward, and Teft danced back, stepping carefully over the body of the unconscious Regal. He had space here in front of the door with no fallen radiance to upset his footing. All Moash did at first was open a sack and throw something out across the floor nearby. Black sand? What on Roshar? Teft held out his weapon, Fandorana at his side, but the knife seemed tiny compared to Moash's weapon. The assassin's honor blade, the one that had killed old Gavilar. It looked wicked in Moash's hand, shorter than most blades, but in a lithe, deliberate way. This wasn't a weapon for slaying great monsters of stone. It was a weapon for killing men. 104. Full of Hope.
"Humans are a poem. A song."
Musings of El on the first of the final 10 days.
"Hey," someone said to the rhythm of reprimand, "what are you doing?"
Relaine turned, shifting the barrel of water from one shoulder to the other. Dabit pulled in close to him, frightened at the challenge. The two of them were in a nondescript passage of Urethiru, close to the steps down to the basement. This was the last guard post, and Relaine thought they had made it past.
"We're delivering water," Relaine said to Consolation, tapping his small water barrel. He wore makeup covering his tattoo, blending it into his skin pattern. "To the scholars."
"Why are you doing it?"
the singer said, not a fused or regal, merely an ordinary guard. She walked over and put a hand on Relaine's shoulder.
"Let the human do that kind of work, friend. You are meant for greater things."
She glanced at Dabid, who looked at the ground, and attuned irritation. This wasn't the kind of resistance he'd anticipated.
"It's my job," Relaine said to the guard.
"Who assigned Axehound's work to a singer?" she demanded. "Come with me. You strike an imposing figure in war form. I'll teach you the sword. We're recruiting for our squad."
I would rather do what I'm supposed to," he said to Consolation.
He pulled free, and thankfully she let him go. He and Dabid continued along the hallway.
"Can you believe it?" she said from behind. "How can so many keep on thinking like slaves? It's sad."
"Yeah,"
one of the other guards said.
"I wouldn't expect it of that one, most of all, considering."
Relaine attuned anxiety.
"That one?"
the female in said, her voice echoing in the hallway.
"Yeah, he's that listener, isn't he? The one that was in prison until Raboniel's voice pulled him out?"
"Damnation." Relaine walked a little quicker, but it was no use as soon as he heard boots chasing him. The guard grabbed him by the elbow.
"Wait now," she said. "You're the listener?"
"I am,"
Relaine said to Consolation.
"Delivering water? You, a traitor?"
"We're not."
He attuned determination and turned around.
"We're not traitors. Venli is Raboniel's voice."
"Yeah," the female in said. "Well, you're not going down where the human queen is, not until I get confirmation that you're allowed. Come with me."
Dabid pulled in closer to Relaine, trembling. Relaine looked toward the singer guards, four of them. No, he wasn't going to fight them, and not only because of the numbers.
"Fine," he said. "Let's ask your superior so I can get on with my duty."
They pulled him away, and Dabid followed, whimpering softly as they were led, step by step, farther from their goal. Well, if the sibling wanted him down there for some reason, they'd have to find a way to get him out of this. The pursuer lunged for Kaladin. Kaladin, however, was ready. He activated Navani's device, which was still attached to his belt. That tugged Kaladin backward faster than a man could leap, and so he stayed out of the pursuer's grip. By this point, the singers had cleared most of the atrium of civilians. They'd lined the walls with soldiers, but not the flat side of the room with the window, though crowds continued to watch from the hallways and the balconies, trusting in Kaladin. Heavenly ones hovered above the circular chamber as if to judge the contest. In effect, it was an arena. Kaladin projected as much strength and confidence as he could. He almost started to feel it, the worn-out, weathered fatigue retreating. He needed the pursuer to believe, to understand, that he had far more to lose from this contest than Kaladin did. And he seemed to, for as Kaladin reached the other side of the room and disengaged Navani's device, the creature ejected his second body and shot toward Kaladin as a ribbon. He wanted to end this battle quickly. The window had darkened from the approaching storm wall, which announced the high storm. It hit with a fury that Kaladin could barely hear, and spheres became the room's only source of light. Kaladin seized the fused out of the air as he formed, and they clashed again. That was the pursuer's third body. If he ejected this time, he'd have to go recharge or risk forming a fourth body and being killed. They went to ground again, rolling as they wrestled, Kaladin trying to maneuver his knife. The pursuer could heal with void light, but the more of that he lost, the more likely he'd have to retreat. This time the creature offered no taunts as he tried to get a grip on Kaladin's head, likely to smash it to the ground as he knew Kaladin's healing wasn't working properly. That gave Kaladin a chance to stab upward, forcing the pursuer to grab his arm instead.
"You're no soldier,"
Kaladin said loudly, his voice echoing to all of those listening. "That's what I realized about you, defeated one. You've never faced death."
"Silence,"
the pursuer growled, twisting Kaladin's wrist. Kaladin grunted, then rolled them both to the side, narrowly protecting his wrist from serious damage. He dropped the knife. Fortunately, he had found others.
"I've faced it every day of my life,"
Kaladin shouted, rolling on top of the fused.
"You wonder why I don't fear you? I've lived with the knowledge that death is hounding me. You're nothing new."
"Be quiet."
"But I'm something you have never known,"
Kaladin shouted, slamming the pursuer down by his shoulders. "Thousands of years of life can't prepare you for something you've never met before, defeated one. It can't prepare you for someone who does not fear you."
Kaladin pulled out his boot knife and raised it.
The pursuer, seeing that coming, didn't do what he should have. He didn't try to grapple or knee Kaladin's stomach. He panicked and shot away as a ribbon of light, fleeing. He materialized a short distance away in front of the watching soldiers. His fourth body. His last one. The one he was vulnerable in. He turned to look back at Kaladin, now standing atop his husk.
"I am death itself, defeated one," Kaladin said. "And I've finally caught up to you."
Venli found a mob of people blocking the central corridor as she tried to reach the atrium. She attuned anxiety and pushed through the press. Since she was a regal, people did make way. Eventually, she reached the front of the crowd, where a group of warforms stood in a line, blocking the way forward. She suspected she knew what was happening. Relaine and his friends had already begun their rescue plan. She was too late. "Make room," Venli demanded to derision. "What is happening?" One of the warforms turned. Venli didn't know him personally, but he was one of the pursuer's soldiers.
"Our master is fighting Stormblast," he said. "We're to keep a perimeter, prevent people from interfering."
Venli craned her neck, tall enough to see that the room was being guarded by about 100 of the pursuer's troops, though she also saw some of Raboniel's personal guard, which she'd picked up from Leshwe. Venli attuned the terrors. What now? Could she help? She found as she searched that she genuinely wanted to. Not because Timber was pushing her, and not because this was merely the path she was on, but because of the songs of the stones and the whispers of those who had come before her. "I'm the voice of the Lady of Wishes," Venli said. "You think that your blockade applies to me? Step aside." Reluctantly, the soldiers made way for her, and once she had a clear view, she couldn't help but pause. There was something about the way Stormblast fought. Even grappling with the pursuer, rolling across the ground, there was a certain determination to him. He freed himself from the grapple, then somehow leaped back 20 feet, though his powers shouldn't have been working that well. The pursuer became a ribbon and chased him, but Stormblast didn't run. He reached out and seized the pursuer right as he appeared. Fascinating. She could see why Leshwe found the humans so interesting. There was nothing Venli could do about this battle. She had to think about Relaine and Lirin and his family. She searched the air and located Leshwe hovering nearby. Venli made her way over to Leshwe as Stormblast stood tall atop the pursuer's husk. The lady floated down. She would not interfere in a duel such as this. "This looks bad for Stormblast," Venli whispered.
"No," Leshwe said to exultation. "The pursuer has used all of his husks. He will need to flee and renew."
"Why doesn't he?" Venli asked.
"Look,"
Leshwe said, and pointed at the silent atrium. A perimeter of soldiers with humans crowded behind them, peeking through, fused in the air, all staring at the two combatants. An incredible soldier, who seemed immortal and impervious, completely in control, and a fused, who somehow looked small by comparison.
Teft dodged through the infirmary. He didn't dare engage Moash directly. Instead, he tried to stay out of reach, buying time. For what, though? Moash drifted closer to them, eyes glowing.
Stormblast isn't going to come in and help, is he?
Vendorana asked softly, floating beside Teft.
Kaladin can't be everywhere at once, Teft said. He's just one man, though he often forgets that.
He jumped backward over a body. Lift had stirred and was quietly pulling herself across the ground toward one of the nearby radians, her legs dragging behind.
Good girl, Teft thought. He needed to keep Moash's attention.
Never known a man to turn traitor as hard as you did,
Teft called to Moash.
What was it that got you? What made you willing to kill your own?
Peace, Moash said, halting in the middle of the room. It was peace, Teft.
This is peace, Teft said, gesturing. Fighting your friends?
We're not fighting. You run like a coward.
Every good sergeant is a coward, and proud of it. Someone needs to talk sense to the officers.
Moash hovered in place, a black stain in the air. Before he could look and see Lift, Vendorana appeared to him, standing a short distance away. Moash glanced toward her sharply.
Good, good, distraction.
Moash, however, casually turned and slashed his shard blade through the face of a radiant beneath him. The unconscious woman's eyes burned, and Lift cried out in horror, heaving herself forward to reach the body, as if she could do anything. Moash glanced at Teft, then raised his blade toward Lift.
Fine, Teft said, striding forward. Bastard. You want me? Fine. Fight me. I'll show you who the better man is.
Moash landed beside the body and walked straight toward Teft.
We both know who the better warrior is, Teft. I didn't say better warrior, you idiot,
Teft said, lunging in with his knife. The stab was a feint, but Moash knew it. He sidestepped at precisely the right time and tripped Teft as he tried to turn and swing again. Teft went down with a grunt. He tried to roll, but Moash landed and kicked him in the side, hard. Something crunched in Teft's chest. A wound that blossomed with pain and didn't heal, despite his stormlight. Moash loomed overhead and raised his blade, then swung it down without further comment. Teft dropped his knife, useless against a blade, and raised his hands. He felt something from Vendorana, a harmony between them.
Teft was forgiven. Teft was forgiven, and he was close.
Moash's shard blade met something in the air, a phantom spear shaft barely coalescing between Teft's hands, and stopped. It threw sparks, but it stopped. Teft gritted his teeth and held on as Moash finally showed an emotion. Surprise. He stumbled back, his eyes wide. Teft let go, and Vendorana appeared beside him on the ground, puffing from exertion. He felt sweat trickling down his brow. Manifesting her like that, even a little, had been like trying to push an axe hound through a keyhole. He wasn't certain he or she could do it a second time. Best to try something else. Teft held his side, grimacing as he forced himself into a kneeling position.
All right, lad. I'm done. You got me. I surrender. Let's wait for Kaladin to show up and you can continue this conversation with him.
I'm not here for Kaladin, Teft, Moash said softly. And I'm not here for your surrender.
Teft steeled himself.
Grapple him, he thought. Make that blade a liability, too big to use.
His best hope. Because Teft did have hope. That was what he'd recovered these years in Bridge 4. The moss might take him again, but if it did, well, he would fight back again. The past could rot. Teft, Windrunner, had hope. He managed to get to his feet, prepared for Moash to lunge at him. But when Moash moved, it wasn't toward Teft. It was toward Vendorana.
What?
Teft stood stunned as Moash pulled a strange dagger from his belt and slammed it down, right where Vendorana was kneeling. She looked up with surprise and took the knife straight in the forehead.
Then she screamed. Teft leaped for her, howling, watching in horror as she shrank, writhing as Moash's dagger pinned her to the floor. Her essence burned, flaring outward like an explosion. Something ripped inside Teft, something deeper than his own heart. A part of his soul, his being, was torn away. He collapsed immediately, falling near the white spot in the sand that was all that remained of Fendarana.
No. No. It hurt so much. Agony like a sudden terrible stillness, nothingness, emptiness. It can't be.
Moash tucked the dagger away methodically.
I can't feel sorrow anymore, Teft. For that I am grateful.
Moash turned Teft over with his foot. His broken ribs screamed, but felt like such an insignificant pain now.
But you know what, Moash said, standing over him. There was always a part of me that resented how you were so eager to follow him. Right from the start, his little axe hound licking his feet. He loves you. I thought I'd have to use his father, but I am satisfied to have found something better.
You are a monster, Teft whispered.
Moash took Teft calmly by the front of his burned shirt and hoisted him up.
I am no monster. I am merely silence, the quiet that eventually takes all men.
Tell yourself that lie, Moash,
Teft growled, gripping the hand that held him, his own hand claw-like from the horrible pain.
But know this. You can kill me, but you can't have what I have. You can never have it, because I die knowing I'm loved.
Moash grunted and dropped him to the ground. Then he stabbed Teft directly through the neck with his shard blade. Confident, and somehow still full of hope, Teft died. 105. Children of Passions.
For ones so soft, they are somehow strong.
Musings of El on the first of the final 10 days. The high storm blowing outside the enormous window presented a view that Kaladin often saw, but others rarely knew. Flashing lightning, a swirling tempest, power raw and unchained. Kaladin stepped off the pursuer's decaying husk and walked forward, toward the enemy. The pursuer searched around, likely realizing how large his audience was. Hundreds watching. He lived by lore, by reputation. He always killed anyone who killed him. He won each conflict eventually. Now he saw that crumbling. Kaladin could hear it in the increasingly panicked rhythm the pursuer hummed. Saw it in his eyes.
Run, Kaladin told him. Flee! I'll chase you. I will never stop. I am eternal. I am the storm.
The pursuer stumbled back, but then encountered his soldiers holding the perimeter, humming an encouraging rhythm. Behind them, humans gawked, their foreheads painted.
Has it been long enough, do you think? Syl whispered. Are the others free?
Hopefully, Kaladin said, but I don't think they'll be able to escape into that high storm.
Then they'll have to come out here, and we'll have to push for the Crystal Pillar Room,
she said, looking toward the infirmary.
Why haven't they appeared yet?
Once we defeat the pursuer, when he breaks and runs, we'll find out, Kaladin said, unhooking Navani's device from his waist.
Something's wrong, she said softly. Something dark.
Kaladin stepped to the very center of the atrium, marked by a swirling pattern of strata. He pointed his knife at the pursuer.
Last body, Kaladin called. Come fight, and we'll see who dies. We'll see if your reputation survives the hour.
The pursuer, to his credit, came charging in. As he arrived, grabbing Kaladin, Kaladin pressed Navani's device against the pursuer's chest and lashed the bar down, binding it in place. It launched backward, carrying the pursuer with it. He slammed into the glass of the window, and his carapace cracked as he struck. He shook himself, recovering quickly, but didn't heal. He'd used up his void light. With effort, the pursuer struggled to move the device and managed to extricate himself from it, leaving it pressed to the window, which was smeared with his orange blood. More blood dripped from the cracked carapace at his chest. Kaladin stalked toward him, holding the knife.
Flee!
The pursuer's eyes widened, and he stepped to the side toward his soldiers. Flee! Kaladin said. The creature fell silent, no humming, no speaking.
Run from me! Kaladin demanded.
He did, dripping blood and shoving his way past the Singer soldiers. He'd retreated from previous battles, but this time they both knew it meant something different. This creature was no longer the pursuer. He knew it. The Singers knew it. And the humans watching behind knew it. They began to chant, glory spren bursting in the air. Storm-blessed, storm-blessed, storm-blessed. Trembling, Kaladin retrieved and deactivated Navani's device, then returned to the center of the room. He could feel their energy propelling him, a counter to the darkness. He turned toward the infirmary. The door had been opened. When had that happened? He stepped toward it, but could see the radiance in their lines on the floor covered in sheets. Why weren't they up and awake? Were they feigning? That could work, pretending they were still asleep. Something dropped from above. A body hit the ground in front of Kaladin with a callous smack of skull on stone. It rolled, and Kaladin saw burned-out eyes. A terribly familiar bearded face. A face that had smiled at him countless times, cursed at him an equal number, but had always been there when everything else went dark. Teft. Teft was dead. Moash landed a short distance from where Kaladin knelt over Teft's body. Several of the watching soldiers stepped toward the Windrunner, but Moash raised his hand and stopped them. No, he said softly as heavenly ones hovered down around him. Leave him be. This is how we win. Moash knew exactly what Kaladin was feeling. That crushing sense of despair, that knowledge that nothing would be the same. Nothing could ever be the same. Light had left the world and could never be rekindled. Kaladin cradled Teft's corpse, letting out a low, piteous whine. He began to tremble and shake, becoming as insensate as he had when King Elokar had died, as he had after Moash had killed Roshon. And if Kaladin responded that way to the deaths of his enemies, well, Teft dying would be worse. Far, far worse. Kaladin had been unraveling for years. That, Moash said to the fused, is how you break a storm. He'll be useless from here on out. Make sure nobody touches him. I have something to do. He walked into the infirmary room. At the rear was the model of the tower, intricate in its detail, cut into a cross-section with one half on either side. He knelt and peered at a copy of the room with the crystal pillar. Beside it, produced in miniature, were a small crystal globe and gemstone. The fabrial glowed with a tiny light barely visible. The final node of the tower's defenses, placed where anyone who looked would see it, but think nothing of it. Raboniel had known, though. How long? He suspected she'd figured it out days ago and was stalling to continue her research here. That one was trouble. He summoned his blade and used the tip to destroy the tiny fabrial. Then he walked over to the sectioned-off portion of the room. The child edge dancer lay there, tied up and unconscious, next to Kaladin's parents and brother. Odium was interested in the edge dancer, and Moash had been forbidden to kill her. Hopefully he hadn't struck her head too hard. He didn't always control that as he should. For now, he grabbed Liren by his bound hands and dragged him, screaming through his gag, out of the infirmary. There Moash waited until the pursuer came flying back as a shameful ribbon of light. The pursuer formed a body, and Moash pushed Liren into the creature's hands.
This is Stormblast's father, Moash whispered. No, don't say it loudly. Don't draw Kaladin's attention. His father is insurance. Kaladin has huge issues with the man. If Kaladin somehow regains his senses, immediately kill his father in front of him.
This is nonsense, the pursuer growled. I could kill Stormblast now.
No, Moash said, grabbing the pursuer and pointing at his face. You know I have our master's blessing. You know I speak to command. You will not touch Stormblast. You can't hurt him. You can't kill him.
He's just a man.
Don't touch him, Moash said. If you interfere, it will awaken him to vengeance. We don't want that yet. There are two paths open to him. One is to take the route I did and give up his pain. The other is the route he should have taken long ago. The path where he raises the only hand that can kill Kaladin Stormblast. His own. The pursuer didn't like it, judging by the rhythm he hummed, but he accepted Kaladin's bound and gagged father and seemed willing to stay put. The guards had quieted the rowdy humans, and the atrium was falling still. Kaladin knelt before the storm, clinging to a dead man, shaking. Moash hesitated, searching inside himself. And he felt nothing, just coldness. Good. He had reached his potential. Don't ruin this, he told the gathered fused. I need to go kill a queen.
Navani waited for her chance. She had tried talking to the sibling, but had heard only whimpers, so she had returned to the front of her room to wait for her chance to arrive. It came when her door guard suddenly shouted, putting her hands to her head in disbelief. She ran down the hallway. When Navani peeked out, she saw what had caused the commotion. The field around the crystal pillar was gone. Someone had destroyed the final node. The sibling was exposed. Navani almost ran over to attack with the anti-voidlight dagger. She hesitated, though, eyeing her traps in the hallway. A magnet. I need a magnet. She'd seen one earlier, near the wreckage of her desk. She scrambled over and picked it up out of the rubble. Outside, she heard Raboniel's order echo with a clear voice. Run, she said to the guard. Tell the word of deeds and the knight known to attend me. We have work to do. The guard dashed away. When Navani peeked out again, Raboniel was stepping into the chamber with the crystal pillar, alone. A chance. Navani slipped into the hallway and moved quietly toward Raboniel. After passing the crates with her carefully prepared traps, she touched the magnet to a corner of the last crate and heard a click. She only dared take the time to arm one, a pain rail that filled anyone who crossed this point in the hallway with immense agony. That done, she moved to the end of the corridor. The room with the crystal pillar seemed darker than she remembered it. The sibling had been almost fully corrupted. Raboniel stood with her hand pressed against the pillar to finish the job. Navani forced herself forward, dagger held in a tight grip. You should run, Navani, Raboniel said to a calm rhythm, her voice echoing in the room. There is a copy of our notebook on my desk in the hallway, along with your anti-voidlight plate. Take them and make your escape. Navani froze in place, holding the dagger's hilt so tightly she thought she might never be able to uncurl her fingers. She knows I'm here. She knows what she did in sending the guard away. Logic, Navani. What does it mean? You're letting me go on purpose? She said. Since the final node has been destroyed, Raboniel said. Vyr will soon return to claim his promised compensation. However, if you have escaped on your own, well then I have not defaulted on my covenant with him. I can't leave the sibling to you.
What do you think to do? Raboniel asked. Fight me? She turned, so calm and composed. Her eyes flickered to the dagger, then she hummed softly to a confused rhythm. She'd forgotten about it. She wasn't as in control as she appeared. Is this how you wish to end our association? Raboniel asked. Struggling like brutes in the wilderness. Scholars, such as we, reduced to the exploitation of common blades. Run, Navani. You cannot defeat a fused in battle. She was right on that count. I can't abandon the sibling, Navani said. My honor won't allow it. We're all children of odium in the end, Raboniel said. Children of our passions. You just said we were scholars, Navani said. Others might be controlled by their passions. We are something more. Something better. She took a deep breath, then turned the dagger in her hand, hilt out. I'll give you this. Then you and I can go back to my room to wait together. If Vire does defeat Stormblessed, I will submit to him. If not, you will agree to leave the sibling. A foolish gamble, Raboniel said. No, a compromise. We can discuss as we wait, and if we come to a more perfect accommodation, all the better. She proffered the dagger. Very well, Raboniel said. She took the dagger with a quick snap of her hand, showing that she didn't completely trust Navani, as well she shouldn't. Raboniel strode down the hallway, Navani following several paces behind. Let's get to this quickly, Navani, Raboniel said. I should think that the two of us... Then Raboniel stepped directly into Navani's fabrial trap.
106. 100 discordant rhythms.
For ones so varied, they are somehow intense.
Musings of L on the first of the final 10 days. Kaladin clung to Teft's limp form and felt it all crumbling. The flimsy facade of confidence he had built to let himself fight, the way he pretended he was fine. Syl landed on his shoulder, arms wrapped around herself, and said nothing. What was there to say? It was over. It was all just over. What was there to life if he couldn't protect the people he loved? Long ago, he'd promised himself he'd try one last time. He'd try to save the men of Bridge 4. And he'd failed. Teft had been so vibrant, so alive, so sturdy, and so constant. He'd finally defeated his own monsters, had finally come into his own, claiming his radiance. He had been a wonderful, loving, amazing man. He'd depended on Kaladin, like Tien, like 100 others. But he couldn't save them. He couldn't protect them. Syl whimpered, shrinking in on herself. Kaladin wished he could shrink as well. Maybe if he'd lived as his father wanted, he could have avoided this. He said he fought to protect, but he didn't end up protecting anything, did he? He just destroyed. Killed. Kaladin Stormblessed wasn't dead. He'd never existed. Kaladin Stormblessed was a lie. He always had been. The numbness claimed him. That hollow darkness that was so much worse than pain. He couldn't think, didn't want to think, didn't want anything. This time, Adolin wasn't there to pull him out of it, to force him to keep walking. This time, Kaladin was given exactly what he deserved. Nothing and nothingness.
Navani froze in place. Raboniel, suddenly struck with incredible pain from Navani's trap, collapsed, dropping the dagger. Steeling herself, Navani went down on her hands and knees, then lunged forward to grab it. The pain was excruciating.
But Navani had tested these devices upon herself, and she knew what they did. She lost control of her legs, but managed to crawl forward and plunge the dagger into Raboniel's chest. She kept her weight on the weapon, pressing it down, smelling burned flesh. Raboniel screamed, writhing, clawing at Navani. The pain rail did its job, however, and prevented her from fighting back effectively. "I'm sorry," Navani said through gritted teeth. "I'm sorry. But next time, try not to be so trusting." The pain rail soon ran out. Navani had set it up days ago, with a small void-light gemstone for power. It hadn't been intended to work for very long. She was pleased by the range, though. She'd specifically worked on that feature. Navani sat up, then wrapped her arms around herself, trying to fight off the phantom effects of the pain. Finally, she looked toward Raboniel's corpse and found the fused's eyes quivering, not glassy and white like her daughter's had been. Navani scrambled away. Raboniel moved her arms limply, then turned her head toward Navani. "How?" Navani demanded. "Why are you alive?"
"Not enough light," Raboniel croaked.
She gripped the knife in her chest and pulled it free, letting out a sigh.
"It hurts. I'm not."
She closed her eyes, though she continued to breathe. Navani inched forward, wary.
"You must take the notebook," Raboniel said. "And you must run. Via returns."
"You tell me to run after I tried to kill you?"
"Not tried," Raboniel said. "I cannot hear rhythms. My soul dying."
She pried open her eyes and fixed them on Navani.
"You tricked me well, Navani. Clever, clever. Well done."
"How can you say that?" Navani said, glancing toward the desk and the papers on it.
"Live as long as I, and you can appreciate anything that still surprises you. Go, Navani, run. The war must end."
Navani felt sick now that she'd gone through with it. An unexpected pain pricked her at the betrayal. Nevertheless, she moved to the desk and picked up the notebook. "I need to get this out of the tower," she realized. "It is perhaps even more important than the sibling. A way to kill Fused permanently. A way to end the war. If both Radiant Spren and Fused could die for good, it could stop, couldn't it?"
"Stormfather," she whispered. "That's what it was all about."
Raboniel wanted to end the war, one way or another. The notebook Navani held was a copy, and Navani realized that the original notebook would be in Kulinar, delivered to the leaders of the Singer military, likely along with the vacuum chamber and the metal plates. Navani walked over to Raboniel.
"You wanted a way to end it," she said. "You don't care who wins." "I care," Raboniel whispered. "I want the Singers to win. But your side, winning, is better than
the war continuing forever," Navani said. Raboniel nodded, her eyes closed.
"Go, run. Vire will—"
Navani looked up as a blur flashed in the hallway, reflecting light. A thump hit her chest, and she grunted at the impact, stunned briefly, before pain began to wash through her body, sharp and alarming. A knife, she thought,
befuddled to see the hilt of a throwing knife sticking from the side of her torso, next to her right breast. When she took a breath, the pain sharpened with a sudden spike. She looked up, pressing her hand to the wound, feeling warm blood spill out. At the far end of the hallway, a figure in a black uniform walked slowly forward. A shard blade appeared in his hand. The assassin's blade. Moash had returned. High Marshal Kaladin was dead. Venli watched the human, so consumed by his grief that he knelt there motionless for minutes on end, and they all watched. Silent heavenly ones, solemn guards, disbelieving humans. No one seemed to want to speak or even breathe. That was how Venli should have felt upon losing her sister. Why didn't she have the emotions of a normal person? She'd been sad, but she didn't think she'd ever been so overcome by grief that she acted like storm-blessed. Timbre pulsed comfortingly inside her. Everyone was different, and Venli was on the right path. Except, there wasn't really a point in returning to help now, was there? It was over. Beside her, Leshwe descended until her feet touched the ground. Then she bowed her head. Show her, Timbre pulsed, what you are. What, now? Show her. Reveal what she was? In front of everyone? Venli shrank at the thought, attuning the terrors. One by one, the other heavenly ones touched down, as if in respect, for an enemy.
This is stupidity,
the pursuer said, shoving Liren into Leshwi's hands.
I can't believe we're all just standing here.
Leshwe looked up from her vigil, humming to spite. Then amazingly, she pulled out a knife and cut Liren's hands free.
I have not forgotten how you tried to turn the Nine against me, the pursuer said, pointing at Leshwe. You seek to destroy my legacy. Your legacy is dead, defeated one, Leshwe said. It died when you ran from him. My legacy is untouched, the pursuer roared, causing Venli to stumble back, afraid. And this is complete madness. I will prove myself and continue my tradition. No,
Leshwe said, passing the still gagged human to one of the other heavenly ones. She grabbed the pursuer, but he left a husk in her hand, exploding out as a ribbon of light to cross the atrium floor. No, Venli whispered. The pursuer appeared above Stormblessed. The fused yanked a sharpened carapace spur off his arm, then, holding it like a dagger, he grabbed the kneeling man by one shoulder. Kaladin Stormblessed looked up and let loose a howl that seemed to vibrate with 100 discordant rhythms. Venli attuned the lost in return. The pursuer stabbed, but Stormblessed grabbed his arm and turned, becoming a blur of motion. He somehow twisted around so he was behind the pursuer, then found a knife somewhere on his person, moving with such speed that Venli had trouble tracking him. Stormblessed slammed the knife at the pursuer's neck, who barely ejected from the husk in time. He reformed and tried to grab Stormblessed again, but there was no contest now. Kaladin moved like the wind, fast and flowing as he rammed his dagger through the pursuer's arm, causing him to shout in pain. A knife toward the face followed, and the pursuer ejected yet again. No one chanted or shouted this time, but when Stormblessed turned around, Venli saw his face, and she immediately attuned the terrors. His eyes were glowing like a radiance, his face a mask of pain and anguish, but the eyes... She swore the light had a yellowish-red cast to it. Like... The pursuer appeared near the soldiers at the perimeter by the wall.
Go! He shouted to his men. Attack him! Kill him! And then kill the other Radiants! Your orders are chaos and death.
The pursuer charged forward. The soldiers followed, then shied away. They wouldn't face Stormblast and those eyes of his, so the pursuer was left with no choice but to engage. Venli didn't know if he realized, but he was on his final body. Perhaps he knew he couldn't run this time, not and salvage any kind of reputation. Stormblast dashed to him, and they met near the vast window, flashing with lightning. The pursuer tried to grab him, and Kaladin welcomed it, folding into the deadly embrace, then expertly slamming them both up against the window. Kaladin pressed the pursuer to the glass. The storm outside flashed, shaking the tower, vibrating it and splashing it with light. In that moment, Kaladin did something to the window. As he stepped back, he left the pursuer stuck to the glass, immobilized and lacking the void light to eject his soul. Kaladin didn't attack. Instead, he reached down and infused the ground, but with power that didn't glow as strong as she thought it should. The pursuer's head. It was pulling forward against his neck, his eyes bulging. He groaned, and Venli realized that Stormblast had infused the ground, then made it pull on the pursuer's head. But his body was stuck to the wall. Kaladin turned and strode toward the watching heavenly ones as the pursuer's head ripped from his body and slammed to the floor with a crunch.
Stormblast, Leshwe said, stepping out to meet him. You have fought and won. Your loss is powerful, I know, as mortals are.
Kaladin shoved her aside. He was coming for Venli, she was sure of it. She braced herself, but he stalked past her, leaving her trembling to the terrors. Instead, Kaladin strode for the Heavenly One who was holding his father. Of course. That Heavenly One panicked, as any would. She shot off into the air, carrying the man. Two other Heavenly Ones followed. Stormblast looked up, then launched into the air using the strange fabrial that mimicked the lashings. Venli slumped to the ground, feeling worn out, though she hadn't done anything. At least it seemed to be over. But not for the soldiers from the pursuer's personal army, who gathered around his corpse. Dead a second time, to the same man. His reputation might be in shambles, but he was still fused. He would return. The soldiers turned toward the infirmary, remembering his last orders. They couldn't kill Stormblast, but they could finish off the invalid Radiance.
Kaladin could barely see straight. He had only a vague memory of killing the pursuer. He knew he'd done it, but remembering was hard. Thinking was hard. He soared upward, chasing the creatures who had taken his father. He heard Liren's shouts echoing from above, so he'd gotten his gag off. Each sound condemned Kaladin. He didn't actually believe he could save his father. It was as if Liren was already dead and screaming at Kaladin from damnation. Kaladin wasn't exactly certain why he followed, but he had to get up high. Perhaps he could see better from up high. Syl streaked ahead of him, entering the shafts that let lifts reach the final tiers of the tower. She landed on the topmost level of Urethiru. Kaladin arrived after activating a second weight halfway through the flight, then swung himself over the railing and deactivated the device in one move. He landed, facing a heavenly one who tried to block his path.
Kaladin.
He left that heavenly one broken and dying, then tore through the upper chambers. Where? The roof. They'd make for the roof to escape. Indeed, he found another fused blocking the stairwell up, and Kaladin slammed Navani's device into the fused's chest and locked it in place, sending him flying away, up through the stairwell and off into the sky.
Kaladin, I've forgotten.
Syl's voice. She was zipping around him, but he could barely hear her. Kaladin burst out onto the top of the tower. The storm spread out around them, almost to the pinnacle, a dark ocean of black clouds rumbling with discontent. The last of the Heavenly Ones was here, holding Kaladin's father. The fused backed away, shouting something Kaladin couldn't understand.
Kaladin, I've forgotten the words.
He advanced on the Heavenly One, and in a panic, she threw his father. Out, into the blackness. Kaladin saw Lirin's face for a brief moment before he vanished. Into the pit, the swirling storm and tempest. Kaladin scrambled to the edge of the tower and looked down. Suddenly he knew why he'd come this high. He knew where he was going. He'd stood on this ledge before, long ago in the rain. This time, he jumped.
107. Uniting.
For ones so lost, they are somehow determined.
Musings of El on the first of the final 10 days.
Navani managed to get to her feet, but after a few steps, fleeing toward the pillar, away from Moash, she was lightheaded and woozy. Each breath was agony, and she was losing so much blood. She stumbled and pressed up against the wall, smearing blood across a mural of a comet-shaped spren to keep from falling. She glanced over her shoulder. Moash continued walking, an inevitable motion, not rushed. His sword, with its elegant curve, held to the side, so it left a small cut in the floor beside him.
Light eyes, Moash said. Lying eyes. Rulers who failed to rule. Your son was a coward at the end, Queen. He begged me for his life, crying. Appropriate that he should die as he lived.
She saved her breath, not daring to respond despite her fury, and pressed on down the hallway, trailing blood.
I killed a friend today, Moash said, his terrible voice growing softer. I thought surely that would hurt. Remarkably, it didn't. I have become my best self. Free. No more pain. I bring you silence, Navani. Payment for what you've done, how you've lived, the way you...
Navani hazarded a glance over her shoulder as he cut off, suddenly. Moash had stopped above Raboniel's body. The fused had latched onto his foot with one hand. He cocked his head, seeming baffled. Raboniel launched herself at him, clawing up his body. Her legs didn't work, but she gripped Moash with talon-like fingers, snarling, and stabbed him repeatedly with the dagger Navani had left. The knife had no anti-void light remaining, but it was draining his stormlight. Raboniel had reversed the blade. Moash flinched at the attack, distracted, trying to maneuver his shard blade to fight off the crazed fused who grappled with him. Move! Navani thought to herself. Raboniel was trying to buy time. Even with renewed vigor, Navani didn't get far before the pain became too much. She stumbled into the room with the crystal pillar, abandoning thoughts of trying to escape into the tunnels beneath Urethiru. Instead, she forced herself forward to the pillar, then fell against it. Sibling, she whispered, tasting blood on her lips. Sibling? She expected to hear whimpering or weeping, the only response she'd received over the last few days. This time she heard a strange tone, both harmonious and discordant at once. The rhythm of war.
Dalinar flew through the air, lashed by Lin, the Windrunner, on his way to find the Herald Ishar. He felt something, rumbling. A distant storm. Everything was light around him up here, the sun shining, making it difficult to believe that somewhere it was dark and tempestuous. Somewhere, someone was lost in that blackness. The Stormfather appeared beside him, moving in the air alongside Dalinar, a rare occurrence. The Stormfather never had features, merely a vague impression of a figure the same size as Dalinar, yet extending into infinity. Something was wrong. What? Dalinar said.
The son of Tanavast has entered the storm for the last time, the Stormfather said. I feel him.
Kaladin? Dalinar said, eager. He's escaped?
No, this is something far worse.
Show me. Kaladin fell. The wind tossed him and whipped at him. He was just rags, just rags for a person.
I've forgotten the words, Kaladin,
Syl said, weeping.
I see only darkness.
He felt something in his hand, her fingers somehow gripping his as they fell on the storm. He couldn't save Teft. He couldn't save his father. He couldn't save himself. He'd pushed too hard, used a grindstone on his soul until it had become paper thin. He'd failed anyway. Those were the only words that mattered, the only true words.
I'm not strong enough,
he whispered to the angry winds and closed his eyes, letting go of her hand. Dalinar was the storm around Kaladin, and at the same time he wasn't. The Stormfather didn't give Dalinar as much control as he had before, likely fearing that Dalinar would want to push him again. He was right. Dalinar watched Kaladin tumble, lost, no stormlight, eyes closed. It wasn't the bearing of a man who was fighting, nor was it the bearing of someone who rode the winds. It was the bearing of someone who had given up.
What do we do?
Dalinar asked the Stormfather.
We witness. It is our duty.
We must help.
There is no help, Dalinar. He is too close to the tower's interference to use his powers, and you cannot blow him free of this.
Dalinar watched, pained, the rain his tears. There had to be something.
The moment between, Dalinar said, when you infuse spheres, you can stop time. Slow it greatly, the Stormfather said, through investiture and connection to the spiritual. But just briefly.
Do it, Dalinar said. Give him more time.
Venli hummed to agony as the slaughter began. Not of the Radiants, not yet. Of the civilians. As soon as the pursuer's soldiers started toward the helpless Radiants, the watching crowd of humans went insane, led by a few determined souls, including a gruff-looking man with one arm. The humans started fighting, a full-on rebellion of unarmed people against trained soldiers in war form. Venli turned away as the killing began. The humans didn't give up, though. They flooded the space between the war forms and the room with the Radiants, blocking the way with their own bodies. Can we prevent this? Venli asked Leshwi, who had settled beside her after being pushed aside by Stormblessed.
I will need the authority of Raboniel to countermand this particular order, Leshwi said to abashment. The pursuer has command of law in the tower. I have already sent another of the heavenly ones to ask Raboniel.
Venli winced at the screams. But Raboniel said these Radiants were to be preserved.
No longer, Leshwi said. Something happened in the night. Raboniel had needed the Radiance for tests she intended to perform, but she had one of them brought to her, and afterward she said she needed no further tests. The rest are now a liability, possibly a danger, should they wake.
She looked toward the dying humans, then shied away as some warforms ran past with bloody axes.
It is unfortunate,
Leshwi said.
I do not sing to joy in this type of conflict, but we have done it before and will do it again, in the name of reclaiming our world.
Can't we be better? Venli begged to disappointment. Isn't there a way? Leshwe looked at her, cocking her head. Venli had again used one of the wrong rhythms. Venli searched the room, past the anger spren and fear spren. Some of the Singer troops weren't joining in the killing. She picked out Rothan and Malal, Leshwi's soldiers. They hesitated and did not join in. Leshwi picked better people than that. Show her, Timber pulsed. Show her, show her, show her. Venli braced herself. Then she drew in stormlight from the spheres in her pocket and let herself begin glowing. Leshwi hummed immediately to destruction and grabbed Venli by the face in a powerful grip.
What? She said. What have you done?
Kaladin entered the place between moments. He'd met the Stormfather here on that first horrible night when he'd been strung up in the storm. The night when Syl had fought so hard to protect him. This time he drifted in the darkness. No wind tossed him, and the air became impossibly calm, impossibly quiet, as if he were floating alone in the ocean.
Why won't you say the words? The Stormfather asked.
I've forgotten them, Kaladin whispered.
You have not.
Will they mean anything if I don't feel them, Stormfather? Can I lie to swear an ideal?
Silence. Pure, incriminating silence.
He wants me, as he wanted Moash, Kaladin said. If he keeps pushing, he'll have me. So I have to go.
That is a lie, the Stormfather said. It is his ultimate lie, son of honor. The lie that says you have no choice. The lie that there is no more journey worth taking.
He was right. A tiny part of Kaladin, a part that could not lie to himself, knew it was true.
What if I'm too tired? Kaladin whispered. What if there's nothing left to give? What if that is why I cannot say your words, Stormfather?
What if it's just too much? You would consign my daughter to misery again?
Kaladin winced, but it was true. Could he do that to Syl? He gritted his teeth as he began to struggle, began to fight through the nothingness, through the inability to think. He fought through the pain, the agony, still raw, of losing his friend. He screamed, trembled, then sank inward.
Too weak, he whispered.
There simply wasn't anything left for him to give.
It's not enough, Delanor said.
He couldn't see in this endless darkness, yet he could feel someone inside it. Two someones. Kaladin and his Spren. Storms, they hurt.
We need to give them more time, Delanor said.
We cannot, the Stormfather said. Respect his frailty and don't force me on this, Delanor. You could break things you do not understand, the consequences of which could be catastrophic.
Have you no compassion? Delanor demanded. Have you no heart?
I am a storm, the Stormfather said. I chose the ways of a storm.
Choose better, then!
Delanor searched in the darkness, the infinity. He was full of stormlight in a place where that didn't matter, in a place where all things connected, a place beyond Shadesmar, a place beyond time, a place where...
What is that?
Delanor asked.
That warmth.
I feel nothing.
Delanor drew the warmth close and understood.
This place is where you make the visions happen, isn't it?
Delanor asked.
Time sometimes moved oddly in those.
Yes, the Stormfather said. But you must have connection for a vision. You must have a reason for it, a meaning. It cannot be just anything.
Good,
Delanor said, forging a bond.
What are you doing?
Connecting him, Delanor said. Uniting him.
The Stormfather rumbled.
With what?
108. Moments.
For ones so confused, they are somehow brilliant.
Musings of El on the first of the final 10 days. Kaladin jolted, opening his eyes in confusion. He was in a small tent. What on Roshar? He blinked and sat up, finding himself beside a boy, maybe 11 or 12 years old, in an antiquated uniform. Leather skirt and cap? Kaladin was dressed similarly.
What do you think, Dim? The boy asked him. Should we run?
Kaladin scanned the small tent, baffled. Then he heard sounds outside.
A battlefield?
Yes, men yelling and dying. He stood up and stepped out into the light, blinking against it. A hillside, with some stump-weight trees on it. This wasn't the Shattered Plains.
I know this place, Kaladin thought. Amaram's colors, men in leather armor.
Storms, he was on a battlefield from his youth. The exhaustion had taken a toll on him. He was hallucinating. The surgeon in him was worried at that. A young squad leader walked up, haggard. Storms, he couldn't be older than 17 or 18. That seemed so young to Kaladin now, though he wasn't that much older. The squad leader was arguing with a shorter soldier beside him.
We can't hold, the squad leader said. It's impossible. Storms, they're gathering for another.